Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for our next season review episode. Tonight, we're going to be discussing The Tight Ends. Joining me to do that is the artist currently known as Baja, who can tell you his own name if you don't mind. Baja, how you doing?
Not too bad, Ken. Not too bad. Man, it's what an honor to be here from a fan just listening to every episode and really contextualizing, you know, the Ravens season to right now just being able to just cover the tight end season. It's what an honor. I'm doing well, Ken. Can't complain.
Very cool. And I'm glad I met you, Baja. You had some interesting things to say over on Reddit. And I'm really appreciating the quality of the community there. There used to be, I think, more of a meme-ish nature to the thing, a lot of Buck Allen memes in particular a few years ago when Buck Allen was still a Raven. But the quality of conversation is very high, and it just needs occasionally good posts to be started. And then you see, you know, a lot of people chiming in a very intelligent manner, and certainly a lot of people I'd love to talk football with on this show, and I'm glad we had the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ken, for this. And it's interesting. We first interacted on Twitter when I was on Twitter, and I just love your content. I love what you have to say, and there's just a lot of people that appreciate all the work that you put in, even in Reddit with the short video. So thank you for putting out this content and giving us a chance to just, you know, get some more perspective. I love your data. I love your insight. So I'm so excited for this.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks. You know, the tight end position we're going to talk about tonight is extremely thin. Kolar and Likely are free agents currently. We know Patrick Ricard is technically a free agent. I think the chance of him not returning to the Ravens is quite low. And Mark Andrews, of course, signed to a deal, will be around for a while. We'll talk about the timing of that deal, whether it makes sense. But another guy that's missing now from the organization is Kadir Ishmael, a guy who was at camp last year, looked kind of physical. And the last name I'll bring up is Zaire Mitchell-Payton, just to lay them all out there, who was briefly with the Ravens to start the year, played in six games, got cut, and then got picked up elsewhere. He's with New Orleans now, so he won't be with the Ravens either. They're starting from scratch, essentially, at this position.
Yeah, they are. And the Ravens have a history of just going in and looking for talent within the college ranks. And it's interesting that we saw Likely, you know, within the preseason, from what you're reporting is, again, you know, just being dialed into the content you're giving us, you know, you were telling us that Likely was probably one of the best players coming out of camp outside of Keaton Mitchell. And his explosion, I mean, the way that he attacks the ball, the way that he separates, basically a wide receiver almost. And just for him to just sustain that injury, you can just tell that really just had an impact on just the relationship as the season came in, when he came into the season. So, yeah, it's interesting to kind of figure out, you know, what is the next step for Likely? Will he be a Raven coming up this year? And, you know, that's kind of having an impact as to what that means for Kolar, because, you know, with Kolar, will he come back on a shorter deal? What does that look like for his market? So I'm very curious to see what goes on and how we handle the situation. Historically, we seem to do really well with drafting in the tight ends. What do you think about that, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have done well at drafting tight ends. In the years they double dipped, they have a history of the second player being the better of the two. Kolar and Likely were the last two, but it was Mark Andrews was drafted after Hayden Hurst. Right. So first and a third round pick there, I think. And then they drafted, who was the other one that was a double? Pitta was after Dixon, I believe.
I believe that is correct. It was Ed Dixon, then Pitta, and then I think Crockett Gilmore, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Was Crockett Gilmore the same year as Max Williams? I'm trying to remember who was the other tight end that year. But yeah, they had a bunch of two tight end pairings, and it looks like they may very well double dip a tight end again this year. I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, it does feel like that is the case. It also curious as far as the Mark Andrews contract. I know that we'll talk about that. I think it came kind of a surprise to me when we all, you know, got the notification as far as the contract. I heard Foster Rico's insight. I love his insight as far as you know, putting that much, you know, insight into his contract and what that may mean. I'm curious from your perspective, Is that the right timing? Is that is?
No, I don't like the price on the Andrews contract. I'm with Voss on this one. We don't always agree on things, but in this one we do. I think it kind of boxed out a possibility of re-signing Likely. There's a backdoor way they can get Likely as a franchise tag and then maybe sign him from there. They could re-sign Kolar. I don't think they can re-sign both of those. And those would have probably been the two guys I'd have tried to sign. So reportedly they did try and sign Likely earlier last year, either in the off season or in camp, they tried to sign him and they had an offer on the table and it didn't work out for whatever reason. And now I think Likely is probably worth less and the Ravens are willing to pay him less as of right now, if they came back to the table.
Man, it's incredible, right? I mean, Likely, what seemed to be a game tying decision or a game tying touchdown in that playoff and the expectation Likely as far as what his market could have been prior to his injury. And man, it almost seems as if there was just something not there, you know, something just not clicking. Might have been just timing, might have been just the injury. And unfortunately, you know, as we see, we still don't have a concrete answer as to if that's really a touchdown or not, which, you know, that could be discussed later within, the production of this, group. But, it's a very interesting group. And I do think there is still potential to see, how we can further, this production as far as, can we take in Monk and scheme a little bit and implement it to the new coaching staff? Will the tight ends be a primary focus for this next coaching staff? So it's exciting. The refresher was definitely exciting in the press conference today.
You're referencing, and we're recording this on Tuesday at 7:00. This will be out, Saturday or maybe next Monday. So it'll a few days will have passed since that press conference. But one of the points that really has to be made is that whoever comes in is probably going to hire their own staff entirely. And Bisciotti seemed to indicate that would be the case, that a new head coach is going to be able to hire a bunch of new coaches. I don't really think anybody is protected from the sound of it. I thought maybe there would be people protected. Sometimes, a key position coach would be protected, or some individual analysts would be protected that are involved in the coaching, quality control people, things like that. Some of those people may, in fact, still hold the same job and they'd be able to interview for their own job, but they're going to have to go through a process where they compete with the friends and previous coworkers of whoever is brought in with the new staff. So that is a real question as to who stays. Warhop is certainly not protected as the offensive line coach. And I thought that Bisciotti went out of his way to kind of backhand Warhop for the lack of progression of the offensive line in today's press conference.
Man, Ken, I was in the middle of a work meeting, so I tried to catch a little bit of the state of the Ravens, and really not to dive too deep into it, but it really just shows you how much of a relationship Bisciotti really had with Harbaugh. And really, I hate to say it, but we have to really, really say, man, we've had some great years with Harbaugh. I mean, 12 out of the 18 years, we got to say, hey, guys, this is an accomplishment right here. So we really got to look back and really look as far as, this organization and what they've done. And, now it's exciting to see, all right, what's the next step? What's the next chapter? So it's exciting as a Raven fan. And this position group also has potential as well, but I would love to see, how they can rise from what's happened in 2025, obviously, and we'll definitely discuss that.
Yeah. All right. Whenever we talk tight ends, particularly on this show, we talk about some of the schemes that the Ravens had with Roman in particular. They had extremely heavy use of tight ends. The 2022 team was probably the heaviest in decades, and I don't have a way to look that up easily. Because the snap count information is not there going far back. They're definitely the heaviest since 2019 by a very wide margin. I think they're probably the heaviest even in a relative sense, certainly going back for several decades, maybe of all time, in terms of having so many tight ends relative to the average number of tight ends that were used in the league. This year, they're at about 1.85 tight ends plus fullbacks plus OL6s per play for the year. That still puts them right at or near the very heaviest teams in the NFL. I haven't actually seen the data for the end of the year, but it's still half a player per snap below where they were in 2022. And it's interesting to see Greg Roman also got fired today by the Chargers. A question I have along this line is, if the Ravens want to maintain elements of DNA of what they do, so they like to run the football, they certainly have the players to run the football, and they had, with the previous administration, all the scheme laid out to run the football, including some scheme that was passed down from, say, Roman to Monken and still did. How do you keep passing down scheme when all of your coaches are different?
I think that's a great question. I think it is curious. It was very interesting to see Roman getting canned today. I was actually very surprised. As a Raven fan, seeing what, you know, the history of the OC position for, as, you know, the Ravens coaching staff from, you know, Cameron to where we are at this moment, it's fascinating, right, Ken? I mean, I think it's interesting because I really love Roman's scheme. I was a big, this is Lamar at his finest. It's almost unstoppable at one point. And yes, sure, there should have been a little bit of involvement when it comes to the passing game, but the controlling the game, I mean, controlling the snaps, Ken, that is you have to be able to control the line of scrimmage. You have to get your defense some time to rest. And it's unfortunate that there was not more elements to that piece of passing game, because it felt like with Monken is, let's get away from the run the moment we get punched in the face, or there's a fumble, or there's something that, you know, causes, you know, I guess a lack of confidence, and we are throwing it when we need to control the game. So it's interesting, Ken, because, you know, I hear the discords of why people don't like Roman, but I also saw the positives of Roman. I see why people don't like Monken, but I also see the cons of Monken. So it's interesting, Ken. It's like, what is best for Lamar at this point? I guess that's the question I have for you for at this perspective.
I'm not sure I know the answer to that question in terms of what's best for Lamar. Okay. But I will say this, there were definitely elements of Roman that were very good for Lamar, at least at the time. And so that 2019 season is still one of the really great seasons in offensive history. It's the greatest for the Ravens. You know, it's not really close, but it was at the greatest. It's in the top 5 to 10 of all time in terms of points per drive, which is often cited as a metric for that. They held the ball, they held on the ball forever. They went for it on fourth down with impunity, and they were just incredibly effective. And there are probably elements of Lamar where it would not work quite as well today. But I would be very enticed if this could work out, if Roman could be brought back, not as the OC, but as the run game coordinator.
Absolutely. That is that's kind of what the point I think that's a fantastic idea. I mean, he has a relationship with the organization. I think getting that element of controlling the game and slowing the game down for the quarterback allows the quarterback to create more options. And again, you're just creating so many options for the defense to throw at. And I think, how else do we element or create opportunities for misdirection? So why not do sweeps? Why was that not part of the scheme? Like, I was curious as to why that part was no longer part of the offense, where you can have Keaton Mitchell and Derrick Henry on the field as well and motion Keaton Mitchell to have certain sweeps to create that element of misdirection. I was curious that it worked well in 23, I thought. And yeah, you can see the tight ends really going after those ends, and you can see just the physicality that they presented. I wonder why that was not an element no more, especially as we saw Keaton Mitchell come up.
Yeah, they didn't do as much, I would say, with those kind of outside the crack tosses where they're bringing receivers back in effectively to try and seal that edge. I would agree they didn't do that as much. Let's talk about more generalized, though, receiving value. The superpower of Monken in his first 2 years with the Ravens was to really unleash the tight ends on opponents. And For all the value that Roman had gotten out of them, and they were extremely target heavy to tight ends, they hadn't been particularly effective. And in fact, in 21, I think there were 9 interceptions throwing to Mark Andrews alone. And the passer ratings just throwing to Andrews and not likely at that point yet, but likely did come to the team in 22. But Andrews and others in that period had really suffered. Well, anyway, in 23, you got Likely in his second year. You have Andrews, you have Kohler as a second year player. And the three of them combined for in the 2 years for 143.5 passer rating, 30 touchdowns and 1 interception. Those are ridiculous statistics. They're off the charts, near perfect passer rating, thrown to your tight ends. It's all a big part of the scheme, obviously. Now, it didn't have a lot of targets over that 2 year period. They only had 248 targets. So I think they went from 110 to 138 from 23 to 24. So there's much more wide receiver centric offense that they were running then. But this year, it all went to hell in a handbasket. They had only a 91 passer rating throwing to the tight ends, 8 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, and a really miserable 7.1 yards per target in a relative sense, down from 8.4. So big difference in terms of that. Do you have a sense of what was the reason for that in 25?
I think, yes, quarterback play does play into a factor. I think, you know, putting in Rush, putting him in a situation where in the red zone where, you know, he's not making the most of those opportunities, you could say that's a factor. You can also say that, you know, also Lamar was getting into a groove. There was moments where, you know, yes, you know, sure, he wasn't showing up to practice on Wednesday, but again, he's getting a Veterans Day like every player should and prepared to play on Sunday. Just him being in and out of the lineup really getting into the red zone. You know, our percentage just really just changed from what we saw in 24, which was a strength, to, you know, not so much of a strength. So I, you know, those factors play into it. I think also you could say play calling, but again, I think also those defenses also, you know, did their part as well. So a little bit of, you know, those environmental factors, I think, all were reasons why.
The one of the incremental factors I didn't hear you say was the lack of extended plays, I think, hurt the tight end group as much as any. I think they're a group that I think all quarterbacks look to a tight end late on a play. But
absolutely,
you know, Lamar certainly has the connection with Andrews, and he had a great connection with Likely too prior to this year on extended plays. And the running around plays were just probably fewer in total, and also probably fewer of them going to the tight end. Fair number went to Zay Flowers this year. Zay Flowers ended up being a good extended play target. The other guy who lost extended play targets is Bateman.
Yeah, I'm here to say that I am a huge Rashad Bateman fan, and I 100% agree with you with every time that you state that he has, I think, the best contract or the most valued contract on the Ravens right now. This is a hey guys, I know you guys are mad that he didn't play, you know, these couple years, but hey, he actually got an injury that isn't his fault. So these things happen as an NFL player, but his value, his contract, and what he does as a second wide receiver when healthy, you just cannot trade away. I do not think you should trade Bateman. So
I don't think that's on the table right now. First of all, I think you'd kind of be selling low if you sold, but I think the hope would be that if Lamar is healthy again this year, that Bateman would also be a beneficiary of that and, you know, would be part of more extended plays. And the two of them, they do really seem to be on the same page.
Yeah.
or were before this year. And just a tough year health-wise, it caused a lot of things to degrade. All right, how about we move on to some individual players here? Let's talk about Mark Andrews first, who had by far his worst career season. Andrews set the all-time record with 11.04 yards per target as a rookie. 6.0 yards per target was a career low, and a 52.9 success rate, also a career low.
Man, yeah. I am, well, first and foremost, I think Andrews had to prove that it's not going to feed into what's happening to that playoff game. It happened. you know, all players from all levels, whether if you're playing at the professional, even at the amateur level, like myself, who I play flag football and I make mistakes in the flag football field. It happens. It doesn't let it define you. And to see Andrew come in and play the 17 games, and again, the production might have not been as high. And I do think that Andrew's, to me, impressed me as far as his coming out and not letting that just, you know, impact his entire game. Sure, we can talk about, you know, what he could have done better, but I think Andrews is a stable Raven. I think him providing that stability for Lamar, it's really, really valuable for the Ravens.
Great. He was coming off a great year in 2024. A whole lot of standards he set for the team. 15.9% of targets went for touchdowns. He had, what else did he have? 68.1% success rate, 9.8 yards per target. So 9.8 to 6, that's a hefty drop. If you're looking at the overall drop in the Ravens' yards per target, a lot of that is Mark Andrews, honestly. I still think he's the extended play target that Lamar looks for more often than, I don't know if more often than not, but a plurality of times I think he looks for Mark Andrews on those plays.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think I've always thought that Mark Andrews was just a reliable receiver to find the zone and find an opportunity to get some yak. And I thought coming out of Oklahoma, I didn't expect him to be so much of a run blocker. I thought maybe he may make improvements here and there, but there are times where you can see Andrews really playing through the line, really playing through the finish. And he's impressed me over the years as far as his run blocking. So again, it's an advantage to have him there. And the sneak plays, it is interesting to kind of make that run. And I was very impressed that he was able to finish that play. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, good point. I mean, his value, whether he's under center and just ramming it straight forward or what he did on the hurricane play, both of those very impressive in terms of both very valuable to the Ravens. Let's put it that way. So yeah, I'm happy to see that too. I don't know how to attribute his poor year, and I don't think it was all him. I put part rush, part Lamar not having the amount of extended plays, part having Tyler Huntley in there for a couple games does not help anybody's yards per target. Even though Huntley certainly played well, he did it with a lot of short passes in both games that he won for the Ravens this year. Boy, would that have been a story. Huh? If Tyler Huntley had somehow – basically been a pivotal figure in terms of winning two games against the Packers and the Bears, two playoff teams, and helped the Ravens get into the playoffs because, you know, everything happens the same except Loop makes a kick at the end of the year. Boy, would that have been something.
Man, what a story. You know, it is kind of incredible. I mean, I think with Andrews, when you receive the notification of the contract, what were your initial thoughts as far as, you know, did you think this was more on pressure to get, you know, a tight end going into 2026? Did you feel that, you know, Andrews has been a workhorse? He's an automatic, you know, going to be a Ring of Honor guy. Like, what was your initial, you got the notification, he's the tight end that we're looking at for 2026, not the younger guys that you've drafted in the same round. What was your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point. And I'd say that they did try first with Likely. And yeah. DaCosta always talks about wanting to work in the dark on contracts. And then all of a sudden, you know, you hear something and Travis Jones has been extended or something else has happened. And it's exciting, really big news.
Absolutely.
this was kind of the antithesis of this. And then what this tells me is that it's likely that they knew they were so far apart that they weren't going to get Isaiah back this next year. And they probably also felt like Charlie Kolar might have been amenable to coming back, but he didn't really want to do it if one of the other big pass catchers was here. So he probably really wanted to get a fresh start somewhere where he could go back to being the kind of target he was at Iowa State, which is, I mean, the whole offense ran through him there. Right. I think pretty much you got a couple players who are looking for a new opportunity, and Andrews is perfectly happy where he is. And you end up Andrews being the guy you make the offer to. I don't think it was the right call. I mean, I think they did it, but the Ravens rarely do anything stupid. So they probably have, you know, investigated what it would take to bring back those other guys. And they just said, okay, we've got three opportunities here. This one, you know, which is Andrews at this rate here, maybe the best option we have.
I like the player. I don't like the price. Yep. I think that's as simple as I can contextualize it. Because essentially what Andrews brings from a leadership perspective, from his, you know, times where when he does make game time plays, it's, man, you are a Ring of Honor guy. Whereas, some memories we can take back. I mean, again, the Pittsburgh 2021 tip pass, was it Lamar getting rushed by TJ Watt? Is it, Mark Andrews not being able to haul in the catch, or, what happened in the playoff game with the Bills and the drop pass? I mean, those things, again, those do stick in your mind a little bit as a Raven fan, but ultimately you need that type of edge. He brings that. I think it's Lamar's safety blanket. I think you have to keep that going.
And I don't have a problem either if part of the reason they did this was as an appeasement for Lamar. I think it's relatively cheap appeasement as compared to what they did with Odell Beckham, which is not cheap at all.
Yeah, that was rough. Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins may have been that as well. DeAndre Hopkins was right player for that, right price for that. It certainly earned every dollar he made as a Raven this year, maybe possibly even a chance to be back. But anyway, let's move on and talk about Isaiah Likely a little bit, because one of the big things is Isaiah's snaps, even though he only missed three games, were off by 34% this year.
Yeah, I mean, the injury did kind of take his, season a little bit, in the driver's seat a little bit, just waiting for his time to rehab and get back into it. But then you could just tell that there was just something not going on. Maybe it might have been just, trying to adjust into the season. Maybe it's the fact that they are playing catch up and he's having to put himself in a position where he's exposing himself. You can see that there was a decline in a sense. And it's unfortunate knowing that this is a contract year, and it kind of makes you wonder, in a contract year, was this in the back of his mind, trying to overperform? I think it's an unfortunate situation for contract players that don't see the success, because we've seen in Ravens history those that have succeeded in a contract year. Now we're seeing what happens when you don't succeed in a contract year. It makes me wonder, man, that franchise tag is a lot of money, and we've already got Travis Jones. Ken, what do you think? Do you think possibly he would be a franchise tag? I mean, for a tight end,
it's a little cheaper at tight end, so it is a way they could do it if they felt like they had to. They've got to get Lamar extended in order to generate the freedom of cap that they would have to make some of these signings. So, if provided they can do that, and based on the press conference today, they really want to wrap that up before the draft. Then I think it's possible they could they want to wrap it up before free agency, I should say. So, they want to probably get it done in February or the very beginning of March. If they could do that, then they could sign, a player likely, whether it's a franchise tag designation or, a longer term deal right away that they'd be getting into. But they need to know that they basically have the space to compete with Lamar taking a lower total share of the cap this year, even though the Piper will have to be paid eventually on any dollars that are involved in the Lamar extension and Lamar, pushing forward to dollars. Now we're finding that way. Roquan Smith and Marlon Humphrey are now, players that are both in a position where they have tremendous cap hits, but the Ravens also. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. So can't really save anything by cutting them, or not much. They can save about 7 million from each. And I think Humphrey's cap hits about 26 million, I think, and Roquan's is 32.7 million. So, I mean, almost the amount you can impact by cutting the player is almost nothing. And the amount you have to pay for the player to play here for the year is not too much. In Roquan's case, it's definitely not too much. In Humphrey's case, it might still be too much, but they'll probably have to figure out how they would, keep him. In the case of the tight ends, they haven't been on their second contract yet, so they're not that sort of problem. Likely, and Anders has just finished one, as opposed to not finishing it and have it being a cut or extend issue kind of thing. I don't know what the correct solution is going to be here. I really kind of doubt that they go the franchise tag on Likely after the season he just had.
It's interesting. I've been a fan of your podcast for so long, Ken. The discussion you initially had of trading Likely initially when he was at a point where you can make an argument he could be a tight end one. I remember sitting back and hearing you and saying, no, I don't want to trade Likely because of the idea of extending him, being that he is the future pass catching tight end for the Ravens. It's amazing how things have changed when you have a season like you do, and his value, trade value, it's almost nothing at this point. So at this point, I think for Likely's perspective, I mean, he is still a great extend play weapon for Lamar. I mean, this is a guy who, when he is healthy and Lamar is healthy, if they're on the same page, I mean, that connection is one of the best in the league. It kind of makes me wonder, Likely, are you going to think about possibly doing a prove it deal? I mean, at this point now, you can look for suitors, and we've seen guys kind of like him, like a Josh Oliver, go to another organization, test the market, and actually get something. It kind of makes me wonder, for Likely's case, you didn't have that type of season. You still have that playmaking ability, especially the last play in Pittsburgh, which is unfortunate.
Right.
Makes me wonder, what would you like to do? Would you like to pay and get be on a team that's not contending, or give it another try with Lamar with the new head coach and a new opportunity? I guess that's what Likely would have to probably ask himself.
Yeah, I do think it'll take soul searching by him to decide what he wants to do. Obviously, one of the biggest season's highlights and one of the biggest lowlights, I think you've mentioned both of them, obviously getting stripped in the first Pittsburgh game by Jalen Ramsey. Was Jalen Ramsey or Porter? Whoever it was, might have been Porter. That play, obviously, very well could have decided the game. There were a number of other plays in that game that could have decided the game too, though, where the officials were very heavily involved. The Rodgers non-fumble and the Travis Jones, whatever they called it, unnecessary roughness against the long snapper.
That's correct.
Which wasn't so. And the league had to have that long talk with the Ravens after the fact, admitted they were wrong about the Travis Jones play, but it doesn't do you any good at that point.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's as far as what accountability looks like, I immediately didn't see the play. I didn't see where there was any reason that there a flag should have been thrown. I still am wondering, what a catch looks like. I guess you can rule. You can say Aaron Rodgers was a catch, I guess, and then you can say for Isaiah Likely in the same exact game that is not a catch. And I guess that's just, we need to get some more clarity of what that means. And that's, when we get into the summer, when we talk about rules and the rules committee, I think these are questions like yourself should definitely take advantage of and try to get some more clarity of. I think us fans would like to know, why did you make that decision ultimately and what that means for the ultimate future.
They have one usually day per year where they bring a official through camp to talk about the rules changes. Last year was Cleet Blakeman to talk about how instant replay and the new procedures for that. when that day comes, they actually have trouble getting enough of the regular media to get into the room. Which is really embarrassing for the Ravens, by the way, really embarrassing. And I love those things. I absolutely love the opportunity. You know, they do have a kind of a dog and pony show they put you through, which is a lot of talk from the NFLPA and the league about safety first and this and that. And this is why we're doing it. And it's a commitment on our part, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of patting on the back stuff. And then you want to get into the real nuts and bolts of it. How does this thing work? And, you know, they had the dynamic kickoff was changing this year. And so there were a lot of questions about that. And there should have been. It's a really complex rule when you peel back the onion. And even Cleet Blakeman there that day didn't know all the particulars. And he certainly did when he was officiating the games. I'm not saying that, but he didn't on that day in camp.
We have questions. There are just sometimes the answers we just would like to just know as, you know, stakeholders. We would just like to know, you know, why that decision was made for that time. And that's it. Just a little bit of clarity. But, you know, it's part of the game. You know, can't control every outcome. It's just unfortunate that was called the way it was. So, yeah.
All right. So we have we got to talk about Charlie Kolar a little bit. He played in all 17 games. Underwhelming in terms of his number of targets. He only had 15 targets the whole year, but he did catch 10 of them. Had a bunch of yardage, 142 yards on those 10 catches, which is very good. 9.5 yards per target, no problem with that. A couple touchdowns and a 108.9 rating throwing to him. So he wasn't a problem, certainly, in terms of what he gave the Ravens. Bulk of his snaps remain in line. Do you see difficulty in the Ravens being able to go and get a tight end of his quality out of the college ranks if they went again with, say, a fourth or fifth round draft pick to do so?
I think with the game of the college game being what it is, I think the game is really spreading out. Ken, I remember in high school just seeing how the game was completely in line, midline offense to now the spread, and the spread has now evolved to now having a heavy spread. Not really seeing
a flex tight end,
that's correct. The game, it is possible to still look for that mold. I think Charlie Kolar is, I think now we have to kind of think about, all right, now we have to expect likely being on the departure. I think it's the safest move is to try to get Kolar maybe on a cheap deal at this perspective. But what do you think Kolar would want to come back to the Ravens? Is that something that you think, you know, would be a benefit for having that second inline tight end, not a passing threat?
I think Charlie may really have a desire to move on. And I don't know this for a fact. I really don't have any special information. I'm not privy to anything, and I'm not texting Charlie Kolar to get information like this. I just see a guy who had an unbelievable target share when he was at Iowa State. He was effectively, as I always say, Wilt Chamberlain in the post in that offense. And it can't be exactly what he was looking forward to in his NFL experience. He's been a good special teams player. They've used him extensively in that part. They use him for relatively few total snaps this year. I wrote down his snap total here. He only had 402 total snaps. So he played right around just a slightly under 40% of the snaps this year. And when he was in there, it was typically as a blocker and not as a receiver. So I just can't imagine that's what he thought it would be. Now people grow up, you know, they decide, hey, this is my chance to survive in this league, is to be a really valuable, multifaceted player. And if Kolar were at the same point that, say, Malik Harrison was a year ago, or that I'm trying to think of who else might be there in a year coming up, who do the Ravens have as a fourth year? Trenton Simpson be a good bet as being a similar player. Yep. He's entering his fourth year. He could be that after this year, where his best bet is to maybe stay with the Ravens, be a survivor. Tylan Wallace is in the same group, actually, where you maybe can get not only a little bit of incremental chance to be on your team because they value you more, but you can get the veteran service benefit, which is about $1.5 million incremental dollars that you can get a share of that pie. But the only way you take that deal is if your choice is like make the vet minimum or be out of the league. or make very close to the vet minimum or be out of the league. And in the case of Kolar, I just don't think that's a risk for him. I think he's he might only be worth $10 million for 3 years to somebody, but it very well could be worth $20 million for 3 years to somebody.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I don't think he really wants to come back to the Ravens, would be my guess.
Yeah. It's fascinating. The Ravens drafting two tight ends in the same round and the potential of losing those two tight ends, knowing that if the Ravens do stockpile tight ends, which again, I would think they are an integral part. It's good to have, you know, fresh bodies, especially with Mark Andrews now taking on another contractual agreement with the Ravens. I think it's important to have another backup and a backup that provides some type of inline or potential passing threat. So it makes me curious as to, you know, what is the idea for the DaCosta's draft strategy? You know, are we, you know, what is a sweet spot that we're looking at? Which I am curious on your draft coverage coming up this year. I'm excited for this year's draft coverage. So I'm looking forward to it. Look forward to see what happens there.
All right. So if I were to try and pare it back, what I think I just heard you say is that you think that they would like to have Kolar. And I agree with that. I think they would like to have Kolar. My fear is that Kolar doesn't really want to have the Ravens, is that it's not going to be as important to him to re-sign here in Baltimore as it is to try and break out of the offensive straitjacket he kind of feels like he's been put in, where he's not really the receiving weapon that he could be with another team.
That is correct. I think maybe I'm underrating, or maybe I just think that the Ravens could get a better deal with Kolar than what I think the market may dictate. But again, the Ravens have a really good history of drafting, developing, and seeing essentially a farm system, essentially other teams coming in and taking those and making deals that think those things are respectable. But ultimately that's just the pillars of having a great organization. So yeah.
This is the year it'll be sorely tested in terms of their scouting department is largely intact, by the way. That's not impacted by the coaching change, and DaCosta's still here. So the risk would be that Harbaugh's new organization takes some of their scouting people. Like Harbaugh says, no, the guys you need to get are Joe and Danny and Chuck over there. Get them from the Ravens organization. They'd be great assets to you. That would be a serious risk in terms of what's going on for next year. But I think largely they're going to be starting with the same people. They're going to have a good chance to draft, a good set of tight ends, but they won't have the same coaching staff in place. They already lost George Godsey before even Harbaugh was fired. And they won't have the same culture for the use of tight ends in play unless there's somebody else to hand it to them from one of the existing coaching positions, or the maybe an advanced scout or somebody like that. I see this as more or less a pretty defining pivotal moment in terms of how they use the tight end in the offense in Baltimore.
It's interesting. There's just been a big discourse as far as what is the best head coaching candidate for the Baltimore Ravens. And I think regardless if it is either an offensive or a defensive heavy coach, I think what cannot be forgotten is how important the tight end position is for Lamar. Historically, you know, there has been just a relationship that Lamar has developed with that group. And I think whoever comes in, you know, needs to at least find a way to keep that relationship still intact to create that safe position for Lamar to always throw to. So I think whoever that may be, and I think it's just, there's a wide range at this point. I think this is interesting even for a Ravens fan seeing this and making fun of my friends who support teams that go through this constantly. I think this is, mm-hmm. I don't think us Ravens fans have ever experienced anything like this. This is incredible, Ken.
Right. Even, I guess what happened the last time around when Billick left, Rex Ryan stayed as a defensive coordinator. And I'm trying to remember the offensive coordinator, Billick was effectively the offensive coordinator when he left. He kind of had Jim Fossil was there and calling plays for a while, and then Billick fired him at midseason in 2006. And I think he stayed with the play calling through 2007. There might have been somebody else involved there, but it wasn't like the Matt Kavanaugh era had ended already by then. So anyway, when Harbaugh came in, he didn't have the complete sweeping authority to get rid of all the coaches. And that was actually a bone of contention in 2008 that he and Ryan, I don't think, really got along all that well. And the point was made by some of the defensive players that they really thought, and Ray Lewis was among them, unfortunately, that they thought Rex Ryan was really the head coach of the team in 2008. And boy, were they wrong in general about betting on a pony for long term. But it wasn't probably good for the locker room in that season to have this disconnect between offense and defense.
I think also just a note just on Harbaugh, Ken. I think one of his best strengths was just the coaching staff. I mean, just imagine the tree that Harbaugh alone has just created. I think that's what we as Raven fans will kind of have to try to see if this next coach can be anything of a pillar of that sort. I mean, just imagine the opportunities that Harbaugh has presented. And, you know, yes, we can talk about the statistics of the blown leads. And yes, we can talk about, you know, the lows and the missed opportunities. But again, that of what Harbaugh has created. And I mean, I still think about how we didn't keep Kubiak, and then Kubiak ends up winning a Super Bowl. So it's things like that. And it's just amazing. It's amazing as Raven fans, like what we've seen over the last 18 years.
All right. So I think we've covered a lot of this episode. We're not going to talk about Zaire Mitchell-Payton is still on the roster. Is gone now. He played 74 snaps last year. The only other guy they have on the roster or practice squad is Scotty Washington, who played one game with New England in 2022. But otherwise, he's been on practice squads for four teams since 2020 and is now age 29. So regardless of what you think, he's not a significant component of the 2026 Ravens. He might, you know, be an elevation for a game or two if you need a special teams big in particular. But the Ravens are starting truly from scratch in this situation in terms of needing to get two players, including the possibility of either Kolar or likely returning, but also somebody else. And it would not surprise me at all if they double dip on the draft. Lay it out for you this way, and I'll pin you down on a percentage here. Percentage chance they draft 2, 1, or 0 tight ends in this draft. I'm going to write mine down as we do this too. Okay, I got my 3. What's the percentage chance they draft 2 tight ends? You ready to go? I'm sorry, I didn't ask.
Yeah, I do. So I think there's a 40% chance that they'll draft 2 tight ends.
Okay, I'm at 60%. I think that's the most likely single number, obviously, that they would draft. So one tight end, then you're at about what?
That would be my 60%. They're going to draft at least one tight end, probably high.
Probably. Okay. So I have 35 on one tight end. Okay. So there's that's the disconnect right there. And then I do have a 5% chance they don't draft any tight ends. And you're obviously at 0.
Yeah, it's just the Ravens have shown us plenty of times that they will replenish. And I think this is an opportunity now to, you know, offset in a sense. You are drafting kind of the future at this moment. Do you expect that Andrews will actually become up to that contract? Because essentially you're paying for future years instead of,
of course,
you're rewarding for past production, which again, we all know at this moment that's not the right way to go into business. But what do you think about that?
I think they're buying into the decline phase of Mark Andrews. And since we just saw a very significant decline this year, the timing of the contract appears to be quite bad for that.
Yeah.
So I would love to be more optimistic than I am about it right now, but I'm just not. The Ravens to go to camp next year are going to need roughly 5 tight ends on their 90-man roster. And it's just not clear to me where they're going to get them. If Kolar and Likely both end up walking, they would need to get 4 guys from a combination of the draft and UDFA selections. If both those guys walk, if both Kolar and Likely walk, I don't think there's any way they end up with zero tight ends if in the draft. If Likely were signed, then I think that's the situation where you're most likely to end up with zero tight ends drafted. They try and bring in three guys anyway. It'd still be three undrafted guys they bring in. And they like one of them a lot. They like one of them a medium amount. And they think the third one is a crapshoot. And they figure out they can get their third tight end from among those guys, plus one guy they like after camp for the practice squad.
Yeah, it makes me kind of curious as far as where they will look within the tight ends. Is this something, a point of emphasis? I think Bashadi really gave us a perspective of what they're going to be looking for, as far as not just from a coaching perspective, but how they can get after the passer and how they can have a better protection within, you know, protecting Lamar. So this is going to be fascinating as far as, you know, where does the tight end fit as far as, you know, their draft schemes and, you know, other positions as well, you know, looking at the running back position, you know, we have to kind of look at youth there. So it's just, I'm curious as, you know, where does the tight end fit in their draft needs? Is it a point of emphasis or what?
It's interesting because the Ravens have so many draft needs. I consistently hear people on Twitter saying, you got to move up in the draft. You got to get better players. I saw so disappointed in Q for bringing that up today and talking about, no, they need to get dogs. I mean, the Texans won that game because they had a number two overall quarterback, a number three overall defensive end, and a number three overall on defense in Daryl Stingley. Yeah. The Ravens have never, ever in their history had a top three pick, ever. You know, so you can't just say, well, you got to go out and get the top players. They don't have the draft capital. You have to play the hand you're dealt. And, you know, they're lucky, quote unquote, we're not lucky as fans, we had to live through this last season, but they're lucky they've got the 14th overall pick with a roster as good as they've got. And, you know, they're going to have to do the best they can with it. It's still not that much draft capital relative to the other teams. And the extra draft picks they have from the compensatory losses and whatnot that they suffered a year ago are still not all that much in total, but they need every pick. They need every pick to build their 90-man roster, frankly, at this point.
Yeah, absolutely, they do. And I just hope that with the 14th pick, whoever this player is, kind of like a cornerstone, like with Kyle Hamilton. I mean, it's exciting, right, for us to have been just a Tyler Loop kick, right, which it almost gave me a Billy Cundiff.
Oh, yeah.
Vibe, where I remember where that was, and I've always been meaning to ask you this, is, you know, where do you rank your top losses of all time? Because I remember an episode where you – didn't have Billy Cundiff as your number one, and I always wanted to ask you, why is that? Because I think that's the worst Ravens loss probably the franchise has ever received, just with how they had an opportunity to just, you know, give it to the Patriots, you know. And
right, the reason why that loss would be tremendously disappointing is because they were that close to another Super Bowl. The reason why I had other games ahead of it, which I think the two which I'm immediately thinking about, which is probably the two that were on the list ahead of it, were the 2006 first round exit against the Colts. That was just miserable. Just the Colts, it sucked, and you know, they didn't move the ball at all. They got the ball back down to the goal line once, and they threw an interception in the end zone. And Ed Reed had a couple picks, and I think McAllister might have had a pick. And they had opportunities. They just, the offense couldn't do a damn thing with it. And then the other was the 2019 round one loss to the Titans.
Okay.
That was awful. And then I'm not sure if I had included in that the loss to the Bills. I think it might have been after that game that we did the episode. And so the Bills loss was in the top five, but I don't think it was number one.
Okay.
I really don't. So I think it's the 2006 and the 2019 games, the following those years, they go to January of the following year, that were among the two worst for me. But I understand anybody who the Cundiff thing was horrible. I mean, the Lee Evans thing, I thought it was a catch initially. We were there at the game. I was, in fact, jumping up and down that, you know, we're going to the Super Bowl because there's only, you know, 10 seconds left or whatever when it occurred. And you know, and then Maureen had to basically calm me down and say, no, he dropped, he didn't hold onto the ball. And the next time around, Cundiff, you know, after they miss on the next play trying to get it in the end zone, Cundiff gets the kick, and it's so ridiculously wide left, it wasn't close. And We couldn't, you can't always tell from the angle, but I kind of could tell it wasn't good. And then I could see the Patriots fans in that end zone going crazy. And I knew that wasn't a good thing. So,
yeah. Anyway. Yeah. We're mentally strong as Raven fans, but you know what? All this, well, it's going to accumulate to another one. It's just who's going to be the coach now that's going to do it. So it's exciting, Ken. I mean, there's a lot of excitement, and now it's just who is it? Who's going to be the guy?
All right. Well, Baja, been great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can, if they have a question for you, if they want to talk football online with you, where should they do it?
Absolutely. I'm on Reddit, guys. So please find me at available_lion7012. I talk Baltimore Ravens. I'm a Miami Heat fan. And also, if you are talking technology, I work in tech. So if you want to talk about tech, please, you know, send me a DM. I'm friendly. I don't bite.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. As always, use hashtag film study mailbag. If you want to get your question in, I might do a 1 to 3 minute video on it, or you put it on the appropriate show otherwise, or I'll just answer it at the time if that's the appropriate place for it. But I really like having a little bit of a mailbag built up for some of these shows and for some of these in particular. It would be nice to have a tight end question. But if you want to get a question in on the next position, the next position we'll be doing is interior offensive line, but I'm afraid this episode is already going to be out by the time we've done it. So anyway, if you've got position group shows or any other question for the offseason, just hit us up. Baja, thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely. Hey, Ken, this was a lot of fun. I am so excited about your draft coverage. I still remember when the Patrick Queen draft and your reaction, and I was a fan prior. I was listening to the episodes. I love Friday Morning GM. I'm a fan of everything you've produced. You're really just an innovator for us, just wanting to know just what's going on within the Raven community. But I would love to be part of the day three if I can.
I'm sure we can get you in. If you want to be on the panel or if you want to be on the just asking questions as part of the room. I really want to encourage viewers to get involved in that. We have a very interactive process now involved where we're working kind of on a spreadsheet together to come up with who we think are the picks that make the most sense for the Ravens. Day three, all days are exciting.
Yeah.
In terms of day one can be exciting because the moment you get down to, we got five guys we really like and pick number 10 is about to be made. Yeah. And the Ravens are at 14. It's just a very cool moment. And from there on in, it's kind of all gravy. You're probably more worried about anything they're going to trade the pick at that point. But it's a very fun process. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and we're gonna keep going as long as we can.
So. Yeah, I think with day three specifically, it's because we've already done our homework within the first 2 days. Mm-hmm. We kind of already have a projection of what our first, you know, kind of 100 to 150 picks are going to be, at least getting announced. It's the day three guys that we, you know, didn't expect the drop. And I love the last 2-3 years that you've done. And I've always just wanted to just jump on and just see, you know, oh, I expected this guy to come here. And this guy, you know, went to this school that we thought was going to be, you know, picked higher. And this guy got this guy. It's so exciting. And I'm excited for April. It's like, I can't believe I'm actually going to be on it this year. So yeah.
That'll be fun. I'm sure we can make room for you. We have usually, you know, we have 5-6 panelists that are going, and by day three, there's a lot of fatigue. And this is a problem is, you know, I need high energy people who still want to be talking on day three, as opposed to we're all just kind of sitting back and, you know, I'm sleep deprived by that point. So this last draft in particular, I had a lot of trouble keeping it together. Anyway, we got to say goodbye now, Baja, but I'll talk to you offline about being on air, and we'll talk to you folks next time on Film Study.
Take care.